Great Jones Street by Don DeLillo. Read by Jacques Roy.
One. Fame requires every kind of excess. I mean true fame, a devouring neon, not the somber renown of waning statesmen or chinless kings. I mean long journeys across gray space. I mean danger, the edge of every void, the circumstance of one man imparting an erotic terror to the dreams of the Republic. Understand the man who must inhabit these extreme regions, monstrous and vulval, damp with memories of violation. Even if half mad, he is absorbed into the public's total madness. Even if fully rational, a bureaucrat in hell, a secret genius of survival, he is sure to be destroyed by the public's contempt for survivors. Fame, this special kind, feeds itself on outrage, on what the counselors of lesser men would consider bad publicity, hysteria in limousines, knife fights in the audience, bizarre litigation, treachery, pandemonium, and drugs. Perhaps the only natural law attaching to true fame is that the famous man is compelled, eventually, to commit suicide. Is it clear I was a hero of rock and roll? Toward the end of the final tour, it became apparent that our audience wanted more than music, more even than its own reduplicated noise. It's possible the culture had reached its limit, a point of severe tension. There was less sense of simple visceral abandon at our concerts during these last weeks. Few cases of arson and vandalism, fewer still of rape. No smoke bombs or threats of worse explosives. Our followers, in their isolation, were not concerned with precedent now. They were free of old saints and martyrs, but fearfully so, left with their own unlabeled flesh. Those without tickets didn't storm the barricades, and during a performance, the boys and girls directly below us, scratching at the stage, were less murderous in their love of me, as if realizing finally that my death, to be authentic, must be self-willed, a successful piece of instruction only if it occurred by my own hand, preferably in a foreign city. I began to think their education would not be complete until they outdid me as teacher, until one day they merely pantomimed the kind of massive response the group was used to getting. As we performed, they would jump, dance, collapse, clutch each other, wave their arms, all the while making absolutely no sound. We would stand in the incandescent pit of a huge stadium filled with wildly rippling bodies, all totally silent. Our recent music, deprived of people's screams, was next to meaningless, and there would have been no choice but to stop playing. A profound joke it would have been, a lesson in something or other. In Houston, I left the group, saying nothing, and boarded a plane for New York City, that contaminated shrine, place of my birth. I knew Azarian would assume leadership of the band, his body being prettiest. As to the rest, I left them to their respective uproars, news media, promotion people, agents, accountants, various members of the managerial peerage. The public would come closer to understanding my disappearance than anyone else. It was not quite as total as the act they needed, and nobody could be sure whether I was gone for good. For my closest followers, all it foreshadowed was a period of waiting. Either I'd return with a new language for them to speak, or they'd seek a divine silence attendant to my own. I took a taxi past the cemeteries toward Manhattan, tides of ashlight breaking across the spires. New York seemed older than the cities of Europe, a sadistic gift of the 16th century, ever on the verge of plague. The cab driver was young, however, a freckled kid with a moderate orange afro. I told him to take the tunnel.
"Is there a tunnel?" he said.